gotta swim, swim for your life, swim for the music that saves you when you're not so sure you'll survive. You gotta swim, swim when it hurts. The whole world is watching, you haven't come this far, fall off the earth. The currents will pull you away from your love. Just keep your head above. I found the tidal wave begging to tear down the door. Memories like bullets, they fire in me from a gun, cracking me open now. I swim to brighter days despite the absence of sun. Choking on salt water, I'm not giving in. I'll swim. You gotta swim for nights that won't end. Family, your lovers, your sisters and brothers and friends. You gotta swim for wars without cause. Swim for the lost politicians who don't see that greed is a flaw. The currents will pull us away from our love. Just keep your head above. I found a tidal wave begging to tear down the door. Memories like bullets, they fire me from a gun, cracking me open now. I swim the brighter days despite the absence of sun. Choking on salt water, shifting away from this war. Yeah, you gotta swim. Don't let yourself sink. Just follow the horizon. I promise you it's not as far as you think. The currents will drag us away from our love. Just keep your head above. Just keep your head above, swim. Just keep your head above, swim. Just keep your head above, swim.
Thanks for letting me do a song. The song you just heard, this song was done by Andrew McMahon. Oh, there we go. No, that's not the right slideshow. Let's get to the right slideshow. This song was done by Andrew McMahon. There he is. So handsome. He's in a band called Jack's Mannequin. And Andrew, he has a really interesting story. How many of you have ever heard of this group before? Have you ever heard that song? Oh, good. I just introduced you to new music. How exciting. Andrew, who sings the song much better than myself, he has an interesting story. And anyone that goes to his concerts, you know his story. And it's because the words have deep, deep meaning for Andrew. And people have picked up on some of these songs and these themes. And so when the song Swim comes on, the whole audience, it's so interesting. The whole audience just begins to, it's like they turn the volume up a couple steps. And they get really loud. Because here's Andrew's story. When Andrew started doing what he does really well, at the height of his career, his mom picked him up from the airport. And mom looked at Andrew and she said, "Andrew, you don't look so good. You look like you have lost a lot of weight. Have you looked in the mirror?" He said, "Yeah, I don't know, maybe." Which I think happens to a lot of us when we're sick or we're just not aware of our own issues. It takes someone else to say something. And so mom said, "Andrew, I think you need to get checked out of the hospital. I think we need to check what's going on." Okay. On June 5, 2005, Andrew went into the hospital, and there at the hospital, he was told he had cancer. And Andrew, he writes this really beautiful blog as he goes through treatment. He decided to take stem cell treatment. And he was told, "You have a 50-50 chance of it actually working." But he said, "I'm going to do it." And so Andrew, he wrote every day in his blog about what it was like to go through cancer treatment. And Andrew, as he was sitting in his bed one day, he saw the word swim. As he was reading one of his books, the word swim just kind of popped out at him and began to understand that swimming is really a metaphor for Andrew's life and his treatment of cancer. And Andrew began to understand, "I have two choices. I can let myself completely be drowned by this thing. Let the waves just fully splash over me and just let go. Or I can swim. I can swim remembering the horizon is just right there. I can swim even though it seems like it's so painful." And when people hear the song Swim, the comments and everything about Andrew's struggle, it's huge. People have connected with him, whether you've gone through a breakup, whether you're dealing with a disease, whatever it is, people have connected with the song. And they sing it out loud when they come together. How many of you enjoy doing praise and worship? Yeah, I had someone once say to me, "Why do we even need praise and worship? What's the deal? Do we really need it?" And I'm thinking, yeah. But then I was like, "That's the best part." I love when you guys do gospel Sabbath. So good. When we come together and we sing, something interesting happens. First of all, with an Adventist group, you see all of us kind of doing our best to pop out of our shell with our rhythm. And we're doing our best and we're enjoying it. But I always notice something fascinating. Look around next time and watch the breathing of people around you. You'll notice that as you sing the songs, you begin breathing, inhaling, exhaling the same. You begin to be one with the people all around you. And you're singing the same song. It's connected with your heart and your soul, just like everyone around you. There are very few times in a culture where you get together and you become one with people as a whole group. And singing does that. That's what songs do. They connect us. And when we sing them together, powerful stuff happens. Songs unite us. This is guy Daniel Levine, and he is a behavioral neuroscientist at McGill University. He wrote this book called Your Brain on Music. Fascinating book. And what he says in this book I find really interesting. He said, music does a couple things to your brain. He said, number one, music, it activates the prefrontal cortex. Everyone say that, prefrontal cortex. You're so smart. What this does, the prefrontal cortex, when music is involved, it activates the sense that you are not alone, you're part of something bigger. It actually connects you with a lot of interesting emotions that you never would have had connected. He said that's what happens, number one, when your brain begins to experience music. And another thing he said is it produces oxytocin. And oxytocin is it's the friendship chemical. It's the friendship chemical. It's the thing that makes you feel good. You begin to feel happy. Let me ask you this. How many of you have ever experienced something a little bit frustrating in your life? Yeah. Anyone ever go through a breakup and you're singing Adele at the top of your lungs? Yep. A lot of you. It's interesting because when you sing music, it actually causes oxytocin to kind of creep in, and all of a sudden you experience some happiness. That's why music is so important. What was it? Oxytocin. What did I just say? Oh, oxytocin. Thank you. Good. Glad you're keeping me honest. I'm glad you don't do that with everything I say. No, it's verse 4. It's good. Thank you, Winona. Your brain on music, it actually does a lot of really good things for your brain. There's also more. In the 19th century, we had this thing called slavery. Terrible. And these slaves, they would be out all day working in the cotton fields. And as they were working, the slave owners, they began to notice something about these workers, these slaves. They were creating their own songs and they were beginning to sing them. And so in the middle of this field, you'd notice the slave drivers, they would notice these people would begin singing these songs and their energy would just pick up. And they actually seemed happy. Some of them didn't know what to do with that. Because sometimes music, sometimes songs can actually cause us to feel a boost of morale. And I would argue this is why some of you, when you're really angry, you listen to Eminem. You're angry, so you listen to that music and it pumps you up. I can do this. I can give the speech. Michael Phelps always has something he's listening to. I think it's funny. I think he's probably listening to opera or something. He totally wouldn't, something you wouldn't even imagine. Music boosts your morale. And another thing that they found about the slaves during this time period is the music actually had a shift, and they began to put coded messages into their music. And so there's a song, Follow the Water Gourd. Follow the Water Gourd. And this song, when you see the lyrics to it, you'll understand it's actually a song giving them directions to follow the Little Dipper. Follow it up north toward Canada. And when you get there, there will be someone who will be waiting to take you to freedom. And they would sing these songs. And so the songs not only brought morale, a boost of morale, they actually caused people to see direction. It guided people. Songs are so important. It's not just something we come together and just sing because we should do it. It's something we do because it actually causes us to change and grow and feel connected and guide us as community. Songs are really important. The book of Psalms is this compilation of lyrics, poetry, wisdom pieces from people's experiences. And what's interesting is the book of Psalms is actually broken into five pieces, five different books. And if you're a Hebrew person, you'll understand this, that Psalms, five books, Torah, five books. The Torah in the Old Testament, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, these five books, they were considered to be wisdom tradition that helped you navigate to life more abundantly. Can you imagine if that's how we talked about the Bible? Think about that. We talk of the Bible as almost a curse to some people. Have you been reading your Bible? Maybe. Don't put that on top of the Bible. The Bible becomes almost a curse when we talk about it. What if I said to some of my friends, my humanists, my atheists, my Hindu, my Muslim friends, this book, it's actually helped guide my life to where I can live it more abundantly. Wait, it's not a code book that tells me how to get up there? Well, not really. It's a book filled with wisdom, divine wisdom from God that helps you live life more abundantly. When you talk that way about Scripture, people can get behind that. You can actually share it. And so Psalms is considered the mini Torah. Psalms is the mini Torah, the book that brings wisdom and guidance. Let's try something. If I want to have a party and I want to get the thing moving, what should I put on my playlist? Anybody? Okay, Lecrae. Okay, good. All right. If I'm experiencing a breakup, what am I going to listen to? You can't use Adele. I already used that one. Phil Collins. Oh, come on. All right, good. That's fine. Good. Phil Collins. Oh, all right. You're grieving. You experienced a loss. What song would you listen to? Anybody? All right. Come on, say it out loud. I'm curious. No? Okay, fine. That's all right. It's too old. I just mocked someone about Phil Collins, so you're not going to speak up. All right, good. I get it. Here's the deal. With the book of Psalms, they use these as liturgies. If there's a funeral, there's a psalm for that. If there was a celebration, there's a psalm for that. Whatever season of life you're in, there is a psalm for that. So these pieces were pieces of literature, songs that had wisdom on how to navigate through that season that you're in. That's the book of Psalms. So I want to go through the first one. Chapter 1. Psalm chapter 1. It starts with this. Happy is the one who... And it'll go into some negatives and then some positives. But I want you to understand something first. I find it really fascinating. It starts with the word happy. That's how we've translated this Hebrew word, happy. Happy. How many of you can go from happy to sad in like 2 seconds? Yeah. Happy is how we've translated it because in our culture, we chase temporary happy all the time, don't we? I want you all to look at my shoes. Terrell, he and I are shoe guys. We like shoes. Whenever I go to the store, I'll notice a pair of shoes. I have more shoes than my wife, by the way. I have a problem. I'm sharing it right now with you. So I'll go to the store and I'll see these shoes, and you know what I'm thinking? I'll see them and I'll think this. I gotta have those. If I had those, I would be. So, unbeknownst to my wife, who supports my addiction fairly well, I'll buy the pair of shoes. And I'll get home and I'll open them up and, oh, new shoe smell. It's almost like a new car that you're wearing it. And I'll wear them around for a couple weeks, and I'm sure everyone's noticing when I walk in. It's my shoes. Shoes? No, you're walking like a turkey, though. Okay. But these shoes, they're so cool. Until Terrell walks in a month later with a cooler pair of shoes. And I'll look at those shoes and I'll be like, those are nice shoes. My happiness is depleted because he's got cooler shoes. So I need more shoes to feel better and happy. Do you see the cycle we could potentially fall in if I'm searching for happy, temporary happy? I think we do this with relationships. We do this with a lot of things. I have to have arm candy on me at all times. And when I'm in a relationship, I can feel good about myself. But uh-oh, when I'm not, then what? We'll make jokes about this person. He trades girlfriends in like he does cars. Wonder what model he's going to have next. Searching for happy doesn't give you life more abundantly. Life more abundantly, which is what that word really means in the Hebrew. Life more abundantly, when you begin experiencing that, you can experience life in the midst of turmoil, pain, brokenness, happiness. Whatever season you're in, if you're experiencing life more abundantly, you can find joy in all of it. One of my favorite artists, he says, happy is a yuppie word. Happy is a yuppie word. Let me keep moving. So it says, this is one of the places you won't find happiness. And it's right here. One who does not walk in step with the wicked or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the company of mockers. To sin is to go the wrong direction, to steer your life in the wrong direction. It's to take all that wisdom and ignore it and just go your own way toward brokenness. And a mocker is someone in the Hebrew that sits back and points the finger. They are sitting in their own brokenness and they're pointing the finger at everyone else. Do you know it's very easy to be a critic? It's very easy to be critical of others, isn't it? Because I can do your life a whole lot better than you. Until you turn it around on me and point out my issues. It doesn't take much to be critical of people. A mocker will sit back and criticize everyone, and they will have absolutely no idea about what's going on here for them. A wise person is not following that direction. Here's what a wise person looks like. Blessed are those who delight, whose delight is in the law of the Lord. Let me make this point. When I was younger, and if you were to give me the Bible and say, delight in this, Tony, I'd have been like, huh? That thing? I found no delight in it because that was just a bunch of rules and regulations that kept me from having fun and a bunch of weird stories that didn't quite make sense. However, if I understand that Torah, that the Psalms, these are books of wisdom bringing me life more abundantly, then it makes sense. One who delights in wisdom is someone who experiences life. You were all teenagers once. Some of you are right now. You are way smarter than your parents, aren't you? You know. Like, you know. That's exactly how I was. I knew. When my parents said, don't do this, don't do that, I was like, okay. It's cute, Mom. I get what you're doing. 10 years later, I look at it, I'm like, oh, man. I know what she was trying to do. She did it in a very weird, awkward way. That whole sex discussion, well, that was very weird. I could have done without the graphs, Mom. But I know what you were trying to do. You're trying to offer me some wisdom. And I didn't listen. Wisdom, when we follow wisdom, we begin to experience life more abundantly. It's not always easy, though, to take advice from people. And the other element it says is this. The one who meditates on the law day and night. The word for meditate here is prayer. The concept is meditation is prayer for the Hebrews. It's how they prayed. We use that term interchangeably all throughout the Old Testament. Here's what we've turned prayer into. Dear Jesus, I really need a new pair of shoes. I saw Mr. Terrell wearing them. Could you please get me a new pair of shoes if it's your will? Which I think it is. We'll ask for things. Prayer becomes this big thing about like, I ask and ask and ask, and it becomes all about me receiving temporary happiness. But meditation to the Hebrews is very different. But when prayer is simply just all about me receiving temporary things, then it almost becomes a joke. There's this guy, his name is Richard Dawkins. He wrote a book called The God Delusion. And in The God Delusion, he says a lot of things I don't agree with. But there are a couple things I read and I'm like, oh, that's painful. He did an experiment with some people. He said, I want you to pray to the milk jug. Pray the milk jug. He said, as you pray to the milk jug, you're going to get three responses. One is that the milk jug will say yes. And you'll get what you want. Or the milk jug will say no and you won't get what you want and the door will close. Or the milk jug will not respond at all and that is the milk jug saying, just wait. Painful to anyone yet? And so these people prayed to the milk jug. There were over 1,000 people in this experiment. And there were interesting stories that sound a lot like ours sometimes. A door opened, I went to work, and I got the job. I didn't get the job. The milk jug said no. Milk jug said nothing, I waited. And Dawkins says that whole system is really all about your mental state at the time period. And he goes through and he makes an absolute joke of prayer. Let me introduce you, though, to how the Hebrews viewed prayer. For the Hebrews, when you meditated, when you prayed, this is what they would do. They would take a verse like, be still and know that I am God. They were in the midst of a lot of craziness. They were feeling frantic, and they knew that liturgy. Hebrews prayed. They would say, Lord, how can I be still in this moment right here, right now? What can I learn from this thing that I'm going through right here, right now? And how can I share with others in the wisdom that I'm gaining from this? That's how the Hebrews would pray. And when we learn to pray, meditate like this, here's what the Psalms say. Actually, you know what? Let me show you this even. People who meditate, they've done this study, neurological study. People who don't meditate, look at the top picture. This is a brain without meditation, a brain without prayer. And you'll see it's not very lit up. This is what they consider unbalanced brain waves. But when you look down, this is a brain on prayer. When you pray, your brain lights up. And notice that both sides are lighting up. Your brain, when you pray, it activates all this interesting stimuli, and you become a fuller, wholer person when you pray. Prayer is so important. And when we learn to pray like the Hebrews, something powerful happens. And this is how they describe it in the Psalm. When we learn to ground ourselves in wisdom, we become like a tree planted by streams of water, which yield its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. If you're like me, and some little drama comes up, you have a very real temptation to freak out. You lose it. An unhealthy, unbalanced person who's not grounded in wisdom, every single time the wind blows, we freak out. We can't handle it. Every time a storm comes in, we lose it. But a healthy, grounded person, they are like a tree. And they're planted roots, they're planted deep. And when that work drama happens, when the relational thing begins to fall apart, you stand strong. You are grounded in the wisdom, the divine wisdom that God has given. And everything you do begins to prosper. On the flip side, there's the chafe. Again, the people who lose it over everything. The chafe, this is what they did with wheat. You would bring the wheat harvest in, and you would put this up on a hill. There would be this round wooden kind of table. And you would put all the wheat on top of it. And you'd have the animals go, and they'd just beat it out, stomp on it. And after they stomped on it a bit, you'd take it and you'd throw it up in the air. And when it goes up in the air, all of that fluff, the chafe, it goes in the air, but the wheat drops. Do you guys get it? Because that's what people are like. When you are grounded in the Word, grounded in the wisdom, when you allow the songs to be sung and you begin singing them together, you become grounded in community, grounded in wisdom, grounded in what God has to offer. When you're not, you're just blown like the wind. Wisdom. When we let wisdom be our guide, we actually begin to be stronger, fuller people. We become grounded people. I want to end with this. Some of you love watching me post things on Instagram of my daughter skateboarding. And I'm so proud of her whenever she skateboards. It's just so much fun. When we go to the skate park, they know her. They'll be like, Ashlyn! And I'm like, Ashlyn's dad! They don't know me. But they love watching her because she's fearless. She just tries everything. And my son, Kaysen's beginning to pick that up too. It's so much fun to watch them. But I've also got to the place where I'm like, wait, wait, wait. Like if she gets like 20 feet up on this ramp, oh no. I started to get a little worried. And so in our family, you would think that I would pick up on that and I'd start to like, hey, let's learn to knit. Let's learn to do some calmer things. But no, we'll watch like American Warrior Ninja or whatever that is. We watch those kind of shows, and we go outside, we create all these obstacle courses. So when you get onto the playground, well, this is just a whole, there's a potential of so many fun things you can do that you should probably have a helmet on. So this spring break for my kids, when kids have spring break, that means parents don't. And you'll get that when you're a parent. It was spring break, and I sat down on the bench as my kids were playing, and there's an older woman next to me, and I saw that she had a granddaughter that kept running up to her and handing her like a bunch of sand, and the woman took it kindly and set it on the next to her. And so we're playing, I'm watching my kids play, and of course my kids, American Ninja Warrior, when you see a tunnel slide, it's not to be slid down, it's to be climbed on top of and then flipped off of. So I see this going on, and immediately my parental skills kick in, and I think, oh no! And I run over, and I see Casey's about to slide down this big rail thing. I'm like, Casey, be careful! Dad, I'm okay. I walk away, I go sit back down. I got back up 3 or 4 times every time I saw them doing something crazy, which in our family is often. Over and over again, I kept running over. And I finally sat down, I'm like, and I look at the woman next to me, and she's giggling. This is all funny to her. She's been through it. And I look at her, I said, man, parenting is exhausting. I just want my kids to stay alive. And she starts laughing, and she says this, she said, can I give you a little advice? And I'm learning to take advice lately. So I smiled and said, sure. Sure. I'm expecting her to tell me some parenting formula or this or that, which never works. I smile. And she says, tell me her story. She said, I had a daughter and a son. I have a daughter and a son. She said, I constantly tried to control everything they did. I was like a mother hen. What they ate, how they breathed, everything that they did, I was controlling it. I had the best of intentions, she said. But she said, when my daughter became a teenager, my daughter and I grew apart. She was frustrated because I never actually let her be a kid. I controlled everything she did. She said, my daughter and I didn't talk for over 12 years. We created so much space between each other, all because I wanted to control her. She said, but Tony, I got a phone call 12 years later from my daughter's husband. I'd never talked to him before. And he wanted me to know that my daughter and he just had their first child. And they're at the hospital, and they'd like me to come visit. She said, I got in the car, and I drove as fast as I could. They lived a couple hours away, but I was determined to get there. She said, when I got there, I saw my daughter holding her daughter. And I understood something deep in this moment. We all have something we can give. We all have a story. My daughter finally forgave me. It took time and space. And she looked at me and she said, I get to watch my granddaughter weekly. And I'm giving her space. And she said, Tony, I hope that you will give your daughter space too. The woman that day shared with me wisdom. She shared with me her song. And I have to tell you, it was powerful. And I'm trying to take that advice as best I can when my kids are doing backflips off of slides. But the wisdom that she gave caused us to come together. And that's what happens as a community. We begin to share our songs, share our wisdom. When we begin to share our experiences, we begin to breathe together. We realize we're not alone. We begin to be rooted in something much deeper than happiness. We become rooted in abundant people who live life more abundantly. And my prayer for you is that as we go through this series, you will find your lyric, your song, your season, and you too will be able to learn to navigate through it. And as you do, you'll understand you are not alone. You are part of something so much bigger. And praise the Lord, we have the wisdom and the guidance of a good book and a good community and a loving God. May God bless you today.